Hey, True North, welcome to another episode of Sermon Postscript. Today we have a very special episode. We don't have Pastor Jay with us, but we have a better expert on the topic that he preached on marriage. We have Dr. Jessica Cho on with us. But yeah, Dr. Jessica, thank you so much for coming on. And do you think you can give us a quick intro, just who you are and your background as well?
Yeah, thank you for having me. My name is Jessica. I currently have a private practice in Brea, California. I work, or my strengths or the focuses that I like to work on at my private practice are couples. I love working with couples, but I also work with a lot of individuals or professionals going through just seasonal changes in their life. And so that's kind of my niche. I know it sounds very broad, but I would say predominantly my practice focuses on couples and people who are just feeling highly anxious. And then also I love working with the adoption triad, so birth families, adoptees, and then fertility. I work with it kind of goes hand in hand, so couples struggling through fertility or going through that journey. Those are probably the primary things that I like to work with my couples.
Awesome. Or people. And I mean, that sounds like great work that you're doing. And I think with that, you've probably talked to a lot of people thinking about marriage or in marriage or dealing with marital problems as well, which I think comes with a lot of marriages just here on earth. And I think just to give context too, Pastor Jay, our lead pastor, gave a sermon on marriage through Ephesians 5. And I think one of the things that he talked about in the beginning was the idea of submission, which Paul is very clear on. And I think for Western readers, especially American readers, when you read that, there's a little bit of apprehension with the idea of submission. And I guess for you, as a Christian and as a counselor together, like, how do you kind of intake the call of submission from both partners, which Paul calls for? Like, how do you see that practically taking place in marriages? And for you, what are the biggest hindrances that you've seen to allow that to take place in marriage?
Yeah, I think this is such an interesting question, or because I know that even in my marriage, I've been married 12 years, and I think any time I have conflict with my husband or any time I am in a fight or a quarrel with my husband, this particular verse always is so loud in my mind and in my heart that submission, it's not just to submit to lose. It's submitting out of reverence to Christ, like not to my husband and to Christ. That kind of gives me that extra oomph of like, okay, I believe that Christ has put my husband over Lord and kind of head of this household. Like, how can I revere Christ? Not just revering my husband. Inadvertently, that's who I end up revering, but when you talk about this, there is this idea of love and respect. It's actually a book, and I'm sure a lot of pastors use it actually for couples counseling when they're ministering to their couples. But there's a book called Brian Egricks, I think. It's called Love and Respect, but it's this idea of women, and I wouldn't say just women. I don't want to only, put it to them, but in the dynamic of couples, there is one who, and typically it might be women, that desire this deep need for love, and they try to find that in their spouses. And for men, there is this deep need for respect. And so when it's almost like this like beautiful dance of when the spouse is able to love on the wife, the wife is then naturally able to respect the husband, and there's this like beautiful dance that happens.
Sure.
But when we get caught up in the nuances of whatever reason why that isn't met, that's what creates a little bit of the stepping on toes and the difficulty. It stops maybe the flow of that.
Sure.
And so I just think that, one of the maybe biggest hindrances that you see in marriage of why, that submission out of reference to Christ is difficult is it's not that we don't want to revere Christ or that we don't want to like submit. I think sometimes our own pain of not having our needs met, and sometimes that is love or respect.
Sure.
We're trying to find that in our significant other. Mm. We're trying to find that need to be met by them. Like, how come you didn't get me flowers on Valentine's Day? This must mean that you might not care for me.
Yeah.
And this goes to, it's not really the incident or the experience. It's really a deeper rooted pain of maybe I'm not valued enough. Maybe I'm not appreciated by you.
Sure.
And so that's kind of, you know, I think the biggest hindrance of that. It's not really the partner, but we find that in marriages that our partners or our significant others maybe get the brunt of that because they're the ones closest to us. They're the ones that we encounter on a daily basis. And so, you see that often in light of marriage. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that reminds me of a Keller quote where he talks about when you make your spouse a god, you're surely going to destroy them because they can't live up to that, which I think is really good. And I think you put it way better than that too. And I guess with that, another question that's kind of related is, I think a symptom of what you're talking about in our cultural moment is, and Jay talked about this in the sermon, is that a lot of adults, Western adults, see marriage solely as this idea of self-fulfillment. Even leading up, like in dating, in marriage, and even while you have kids, it's all about self-fulfillment. And I'm going to read a quote that David Brooks wrote in The Atlantic last year about this idea of that, and I think it was really good. He wrote, "The dominant family culture in America has been the self-expressive marriage. Americans now look to marriage increasingly for self-discovery, self-esteem, and personal growth. Marriage is no longer primarily about childbearing or child rearing. Now, in America, marriage is primarily about adult fulfillment." And yeah, I don't know, when I read that, I was deeply rebuked myself as a husband too. Mm-hmm. And I guess for you, just like, yeah, what are your thoughts on that idea, maybe this quote? Do you find that to be true in your practice and in your counseling as well?
Yeah. You know, I think that's not really the design of marriage.
Mm.
You know, it's the purpose of marriage is not so that we ourselves can be fully fulfilled by our partner.
Sure.
Just like you said, we will be deeply disappointed. But I think, because of our maybe brokenness or our own pain, boy, marriage and relationship can really be a huge distraction to having to look at our own stuff, because marriage is, at least in the beginning, it is a lot of rainbows and butterflies. It feels euphoric, you know? And so I think that, you know, we want marriage to be long lasting, like till the day we die, right? But
sure.
The beginning of marriage is really about how you make me feel.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I want to stay in this, because you make me feel phenomenal, right? Like, I feel good about myself, or maybe in some ways, you know, that love and respect dance, it's like I am able to give you so much love or respect that in turn you give me so much love and respect. And so it's just this beautiful, like, tsunami of love and respect in the beginning of relationship. And so what I know about that is it doesn't last. It's not sustainable. And I think that when we are often trying to find, I mean, I think that's so poignant because today is Valentine's Day, where our worth really does not come from our partners or our relationship status or, you know, yeah, I think so many people feel like, if I were to say, maybe they don't feel worthy enough. And so, you know, I have singles who they just don't feel like they're valued or they're enough. And so if they were in relationship, boy, that would squash that, right? That's a quick way of squashing that. Like, see, this person can value me or love me in the way that I want to be wanted or needed. And that's just not the design, because it's not the way that it's sustainable. And so I can absolutely see how this, you know, how this quote, it is talking about like this self-fulfillment, and it just, it doesn't work that way, and it can't sustain itself in the long run. And I think that's why, you know, marriages talk about this like 7-year itch. I think we can kind of have like this threshold. Maybe it won't even last the 7 years. Maybe, you know, you see people having a lot more difficulty and strife in the first year or second year or third year, and they're just kind of battling through it. But there has to be growth. There has to be this self-reflection and self-insight of like, what about this is making it so difficult? And the people that really go through that growth will be able to gain some insight about, wow, like, why am I so upset about this? Like, where is this coming from? But instead, the person who created so much love and affection for them, now it's like that person creates so much hurt.
And it's like the complete reverse.
Right. And so they want to avoid it. They want to get rid of it. They don't want to be in the marriage anymore. They don't want to have to deal with it. And it never really started with them in the first place. It started with us.
Sure.
And so that displacement of expectation and the displacement of disappointment when it's not met, I think that's the, you know, the climactic, but then it's a quick, you know, downturn of marriage when that's our expectation.
Yeah, I that was really good and even insightful for my own marriage too. And I think with that, I one question I want to have, and this is kind of open-ended and this could be long, but you could summarize it as best as you can. How could you give tips for those you may be looking to marriage or in marriage to prepare for the long haul instead of the 7-year honeymoon phase that you're talking about? Like, and you know, I'm sure, you know, if you really want it, you guys could reach out to Dr. Cho for like an actual session. But maybe some common like tips that you give to married couples and those preparing for marriage for that, I think might be helpful for our church.
Yeah, I think there's like two different things that I really look for. If a couple is already married, you know, there's a different way of going about it, because the hope, and this is kind of what I glean from the couple, is divorce an option for you guys, right? Because I don't want to think that, you know, I think oftentimes people are like, I don't want to get divorced because of my kids, or I really don't want this because of whatever the reason might be. I'm not saying that it's not a valid reason, but is it for themselves? I hear a lot of times, you know, I counseled a couple with 3 kids, and their first session was, how do I tell my kids, how do we break it to our kids that we're getting a divorce for the second time? They basically had split up and they're getting back together. And I think the question kind of comes back to like, you can't want this marriage for your kids, because that too. Is not sustainable. It's the same thing. Instead of wanting it for your significant other in the beginning of the relationship, now it you know, fixed itself on the kids, and that can't be the reason why. And you know, luckily this particular family, they're married and they stayed married, and they're doing great now. But the reason how we were able to do the turnaround was, they actually were able to say that they wanted the relationship inherently, you know, that they didn't really want to break up the family, that they really did want a relationship to work out. But after 15, 17 years of trying, like, it still wasn't there, and they were just at a loss that they had to completely just break it. Right. And I think that's what I'm looking for. If that nugget of, do you want this for yourself? Because that means that you are ripe enough. And I use like this fruit analogy of like, if you're ripe, and this is like a kind of another segue to counseling. Like, sometimes I think couples come into counseling where one is ripe and one isn't. You know, when fruit is ripe, it is sweet. It is good. We get all the juices out of that. Like, it's a good experience. Sure. But when fruit isn't, it's like, it's bitter. It's harder to cut. It's just harder to navigate that fruit and then enjoy it. And I think counseling can be that experience where we really want, I'm not saying that you have to be like ready for that change, but I think you have to kind of have to know, like, is this for you? or is this for someone else? And that's kind of what we tease out. But I mean, there's, I'm sorry, I'm like segueing into so much, but
no, I think like it's good.
The practicality of it is, you know, I started with like for the married couples, is it for you? But for the couples that are seriously dating too, I love that, you know, period, because they're not married yet and yeah. they're really navigating like, can I work with this person? Like, can I really do this? And to be honest with that question, you have to know like what it is that you want and not negotiate on them, right? Like, I think sometimes people think that they're being selfish by, you know, I hear this with my singles. They'll be like, is it okay that I'm not like physically attracted to this person? They have so many other things that enough is. And I'm like, it's not that they shame themselves for being superficial. And I'm not, regardless of whether it's superficial or not, it's like only you can really answer that question. Do you think that physical attraction is important to you? Because for most and for many, it is, right? So don't make yourself like such a don't make yourself the evil person because that's something that you want. And I always say, like, in relationship, you have to be selfish about what you want, because that's the only way that a relationship can sustain. Not being like selfish as in like, I want everything and like, you don't get anything, but it's selfish in the sense of like, do I know what my needs are? Do I know what I want? And when I negotiate them, you know, sometimes we think we're being loving or selfless by negotiating our wants and our needs, but really we're not. We're crossing our own boundaries because we know that that's not sustainable. You know.
Yeah.
So.
No, I think that was really helpful, and I've never, you know, I think you put it really well. And correct me if I'm wrong. If I'm summarizing that, for those that are married, you have to be really aware of your self-centeredness. That like. If you're saying it's for the kids, it's ultimately saying that you want to be a good mom or dad, and that's ultimately about you, not about the spouse. But for dating couples, which I think is interesting, you said it's almost a reverse where you get so caught up in the idealism and the romanticism of marriage that you are too selfless in a way, right? Maybe that's not the right way, but you're too naive and too blind with emotions to be real with yourself. And I think that's really important. And I always tell people too that I think more important than marital counseling is getting counseling before you're married because you don't have time in marriage sometimes to fix your issues and you have to kind of deal with it with a partner. But I think when you're single, you have so much time and freedom, which is key. And Paul talks about that freedom is actually a gift from God.
Yeah.
So maybe can you speak into that too, of like the importance of singles and those wanting to get married to get counseling?
Yes. You know, in order for something to be whole, you got to make sure the individual parts work well, that they function so that when we come together, it works as it's designed, right? I think about a car. If something is wrong with the engine, you don't just rid yourself of the car. You actually make a decision of like, can I fix it? Is it fixable? Can we make repair? And I think, people think that, you know, especially for, and I love working with my singles because I think they have so much more insight about themselves that when they now couple themselves or start to date, it is so evident that their partner is, or the person that they are engaging with is like either really aware or unaware. Because they've done the work themselves. Like, once you know 1 + 1 = 2, you can't go back to not knowing 1 + 1 = 2, right? And so I feel like for my singles who become aware of their own triggers or their own pain or their own brokenness, it's much easier to see the world in that way. Like, not to say that they're psychoanalyzing everyone, but it's just kind of this, like, inherent awareness about themselves, and so it becomes more evident in other people.
Yeah.
And they get an ability to actually say, wow, like, you know, the couples who, you know, my singles who then become in a relationship, they're like, you know, I really think my partner or my boyfriend needs to work on that, or my girlfriend needs to work on that. And it's not an arrogant thing. It's really something that comes from a place of like, I can't fix them. And if we go into this marriage, there is almost like this expectation that they think I can fix it and I can't. Yeah. Yes. You know? And so it's a beautiful part. I mean, I was, you know, one of the things that you were talking about for the singles is like, you know, how can they prepare for marriage? It's like work. It's okay to work on yourself. It's not selfish. It's so loving to work on yourself and to have that time to recognize your boundaries of what you want and what you need and how to ask for them.
Sure.
Because in so many of my couples, I'm teaching them how to do that. Yeah. And if they were able to set up those expectations and boundaries from the get-go, I think we wouldn't run into these problems, but it wouldn't be so frequent and so triggering, right?
No, I think that's really helpful. And I guess a good ending question to cap off the last couple questions too is, you know, the beauty of being a Christian is that you can track through all of life together with the body in the church. And I guess, you know, as a counselor, one interesting question I wanted to ask that I don't hear often asked is, well, how can the church community take practical steps to be a culture and a body conducive to healthy marriages, either present ones or the future ones to come? Because I do think, you know, as a pastor, like, I think marriage culture and in Christian churches is really unhealthy at times. And, you know, I guess for you as a counselor, like, what are some tips you could give church members to build a healthy community and build a healthy culture at church about that?
One, I think, as for the church community at large, is normalizing that conflict is absolutely normal and okay.
Yes, yes.
That, you know, sometimes couples come to me and say, you know, we never fight. And for me, that's almost kind of like a red flag. Like, you should be fighting. Like, you should have conflict because that's more normal. That's actually being real. When people don't fight, it's not to say that, like, you got to be yelling and screaming, but to be able to have an ability to resolve and we shouldn't be so conflict averse is what I'm saying. And to normalize that, that's a huge part. Yeah. But secondly, normalizing like counseling in general, I think, you know, sometimes we hear like, oh, couples counseling, that's for like people who need couples counseling. And I want to say like every couple needs couples counseling. It's almost like, it's an enrichment. It's a constant learning. We never stop learning about ourselves and our spouses. I'm still growing. I mean, I stayed up until 1:30 last night talking with my husband, not because we were fighting, but we're just talking about what we're learning about ourselves in this season. And it's like, wow, I didn't know that you thought that way, or it's a constant growth, you know? And so couples counseling is not for just the people in crisis. It's for people who are wanting to remain healthy in their marriage.
Yeah.
It's like community. And sometimes I think we really shun maybe counseling because we think that it's really for people in crisis. And I will say we wait for crisis to occur to be reactive to like, let's put out that fire. And, you know, I think as a church, we have small groups and we have community sometimes by life stage for a reason, but I think sometimes it can be helpful to add that extra piece of maybe this might be helpful, you know, in certain couples, because there's this, they keep getting hung up on that one beat. Or, you know, somebody keeps getting their toes stepped on that one part of the dance. And, you know, when you see a pattern, let's talk about that. Let's not just, like, go over it. I see, there's a pattern here. How can we normalize that? I went to a couples counseling, and it's amazing. And, you know, just being able to have more people engage in that and creating, you know, marriage enrichment and, I think there is a stigma of like there has to be crisis in order to get this reactive measure. And why can't we do the preventative part? It's not bad. It's great. It's actually sure. what sustains and maybe prevents the big fires from happening in the first place. So
yeah, no, I think that's really good. Especially as a pastor, like we have a lot of people that come to us and, you know, we're going to do our best that we can. But oftentimes, like we try and tell them, like, there are other people trained that we know that can do a much better job than what we're doing. And I think Jay and I are big proponents of counseling in any form, mm-hmm. especially marriage too. So yeah, thank you so much for coming on, Dr. Jessica. Could you give maybe people that are interested in a session with you any information how to do that too?
Yes. I have a website. It's anewleafcounseling.org. So www.anewleafcounseling.org. Or you can maybe Google me, Jessica Cho. I'm a PsyD, so it's PsyD LCSW. Those are just my credentials. I have a doctorate in psychology and I'm a licensed clinical social worker. So it just gives you a better way to find me. And so hopefully we can get connected through that. And I have a phone number. You can call me at 714-831-0771. And I have an email, jessicachosaidi@gmail.com.
Awesome. We'll have that all on the link to in our bio if you do want to check Dr. Cho out, and really encourage, whether it's Dr. Jessica or just someone, if you feel like you need counseling, please, especially as a True North member, we really encourage it too. So thank you so much for coming on. I think that was a really good conversation, a really insightful one, even for myself. And yeah, thanks so much.
Thank you.